Okay, so my guest today is Erica Neely. Erica is an associate professor of philosophy at Ohio Northern University, specializing in the philosophy of technology and computer ethics. Her work focuses on the ethical ramifications of emerging technologies. She's written a number of papers on 3D printing, the ethics of video games, robotics, and augmented reality. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you for having me.
So you've written a number of fascinating papers over the past few years, including some really insightful ones on how we can apply ethical rules to choices we make in video games, and also one on whether we can welcome machines into our moral community. It's a topic actually I've discussed in a number of previous episodes on this podcast. But we're not going to talk about either of those topics today. We're going to focus instead on a paper that you recently published on the ethical dilemmas that arise from the use of augmented reality technologies. And specifically a paper about the ethics of property rights over augmented reality. So let me just start then with an obvious question, which is, you know, what is augmented reality?
Sure. Augmented reality is the use of technology to project digital content onto our experience of the physical world. And the key thing about it is that the content projected depends on and adapts to properties of the surrounding space. So basically, it changes what you see when you're in a particular place.
How would you differentiate between augmented reality and virtual reality? Are they related concepts, and what are the key differences between them? I think maybe you hinted at that at the definition anyway, but just to clarify the conceptual distinction.
Sure. Virtual reality tends to be more of a replacement of reality. So you're not seeing, you know, the current physical world. You're seeing whatever this virtual world is. So your video game or a planet surface or something like that. Augmented reality doesn't get rid of the physical reality around you. It just puts content on top of it. So I would still probably be seeing most of the same things. I just might have information projected on it. So a good example would be something like Pokemon Go, where people are wandering around trying to catch the little Pokemon monsters. And they still see all of the surrounding streets and houses and buildings, but they also have this digital content of these little Pokemon that they see in particular locations also.
Yeah, so I mean, the clue is in the name to an extent, in that augmented reality is layering some digital augmentation onto physical reality, whereas virtual reality is trying to abstract away from physical reality or to get you immersed in a distinctive virtual non-physical environment. So,
right.
Yeah, I think we'll come back to this relationship between the two in a moment anyway, because it has a particular significance when it comes to the issue of property rights. Now, you mentioned Pokemon Go as a kind of a clear example of augmented reality in action. Could you maybe give some other examples of augmented reality technologies, and, you know, how mainstream are they, and are they becoming more prevalent over time?
Sure. So Google Glass was one that people may have heard of. This was essentially, they made this pair of glasses that look fairly close to regular glasses, and they would project information onto the lenses about your surroundings. Project seems to have stalled, but there are a lot of people working on similar things. Probably less dramatic uses of augmented reality are brand specific. So IKEA has an app where you can virtually place pieces of furniture and see how they would look in your house. So I like this sofa. I wonder how it would look in my living room. And you can take a look at it. I think one of the makeup companies, maybe L'Oreal, did something similar where it will scan your face and then try to project what you would look like with different kinds of makeup on top of it. So those are more subtle uses. I'm not sure people even would necessarily recognize them immediately as augmented reality, but I think that's how we're seeing it slowly creep into our everyday experiences.
Do you think there's an important distinction between the kind of technological interface for augmented reality? So we have augmented reality on our smartphones, where effectively there's a digital projection onto the camera image on the screen of the phone. And that's effectively how something like Pokemon Go worked, I guess. And I presume that's effectively how this IKEA app that you mentioned works.
Right.
Whereas Google Glass is, at least it would appear to be, slightly more immersive, or it creates, so let me rephrase it. So like the phone, it's very clear separation between your ordinary visual experience of the world and what you see on the screen of the phone. Whereas with the wearable, you are seeing the world only kind of through the augmented lenses, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think that that's definitely a good point, because it's very easy to distinguish, oh, I'm looking at the screen of my phone. If I look up, I'm well aware that the Pokemon or the piece of furniture or whatever isn't actually there. The glasses, and Microsoft had a project for lenses, the HoloLens, and those I think are a little bit different, because aside from taking off the glasses or taking off the lenses, you don't really have a way to switch back and forth. So I think it would be a lot easier to get immersed in that and to just start taking that extra information as sort of second nature. Of course, this is here. I see it.
Yeah. The other thing as well I wanted to ask, just as this initial framing for our conversation about the philosophy and ethics of it, is, you know, how much hype is there associated with augmented reality? I seem to recall maybe 2 years ago, with one of the releases of the iPhone, Apple were saying they were investing heavily on augmented reality, and they seem to view this as a real, you know, wave of the future technology. But, you know, we've had similar projections made in the past about virtual reality, and my impression of it, and I'm sure my impression is wrong and miscalibrated in various ways, is that virtual reality hasn't really become mainstream. You know, things like the Oculus Rift, they're neat gaming devices, but it's not like everyone has them or they're in everybody's home in the same way as a smartphone is, let's say. I mean, is augmented reality hype, or is it something that will really become much more deeply embedded in how we experience the world?
I think that augmented reality is sort of an odd duck, because I think that virtual reality is what people think of and they get really excited. And the roots of it are deep. I mean, think about Star Trek's holodeck, where you can walk in and be in whatever scenario you want to project. I think that it's the flashy, shiny thing that we keep pursuing. But as you point out, it's nowhere near common adoption. I mean, we've been chasing virtual reality, and it's been, you know, quote unquote, just around the corner for decades now. Augmented reality, I think, is less showy, but I also think that it's a lot more practical, and it is slowly creeping into our lives. I don't know if I think it's going to be everybody wanders around with lenses or glasses or something, but I think that we're going to see more of it. There's some uses, for instance, in luxury cars that are projecting heads-up displays, so that you could do things like, if you integrated it with a GPS, it could visually highlight what lane you should be in, or if you should change lanes, or if you're approaching the car ahead of you too quickly, or something like that. And I think those are a lot more subtle than this, I can enter an entirely new world, virtual reality idea. But I also think that they're happening a lot more quickly. They're a lot more attainable. So I think of it as sort of the slow burn, as opposed to having the pyrotechnics and excitement of virtual reality.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, your earlier example of the IKEA and the makeup uses of augmented reality, they kind of suggest that augmented reality will come into our life maybe in specific use cases. And as you point out, we might even notice them or appreciate that they are a form of augmented reality. And driver assist technology, as you mentioned there, is becoming far more prevalent. You know, various parking assist technologies with visual displays that point out right. The trajectory you're supposed to take into a parking space. That's a kind of augmented reality, and quite a helpful one. And I think you could imagine that sort of use case proliferating. So, you know, if I want to change the tire on my bike, at the moment because I can never remember how to do it, I always look up like a YouTube tutorial on how to change the tire. But I could imagine doing the same thing using an augmented reality pair of lenses, which gives me this kind of paint-by-numbers approach to changing the tire on my bikes, and it would be a kind of augmented reality. And I think actually that kind of use would be really interesting from an ethical perspective as well.
Yes, I think that sort of ordinary everyday use is a lot more likely with augmented reality than virtual reality. Virtual reality seems to have a lot of promise for entertainment purposes and maybe some educational ones, but augmented reality seems like it would be a lot more useful in the day-to-day, how do I change the tire? Should I buy this piece of furniture kinds of cases.
Yeah, and I think you also mentioned somewhere in the paper that this is becoming a thing in surgery. Is that correct? It's kind of augmented reality surgery.
Right. So they're using augmented reality, or they've done some uses of this, where they could essentially project information onto the surgical site. So much more precisely have the information about, where to make the incision or things like that. So it's an interesting use case also as medical use of this kind of technology.
Okay, but let's move in then to, I guess, the substance of your paper, which is about property rights. And I mean, there are lots of interesting ethical and philosophical questions I think we could ask about augmented reality, but we'll focus on the property rights question. Maybe at the end we'll come back to some of the other questions that you think are worth
Sure.
asking about augmented reality. So since your paper is about property rights, it'll probably help at the outset if we just have some clear sense of what property rights are. And I mean, there are two questions I wanted to ask here. One might be less important than the other, but the first one I think is important, just so people have a clear sense of it in their minds, which is if I claim that I have a property right to something, what kind of claim am I making? What does saying that I have a property right to something entitle me to do? So if I say that I have a property right in my own home that I own, what does that usually entail?
Sure. The general idea behind a property right is that if I have that right towards something, then it is wrong for others to deprive me of it or to interfere with my reasonable use of it. So in the case of your home, you own your home, and if you wanted to paint the walls of your living room neon pink, then you ought to be able to do that because it is your piece of property and that is a reasonable, if somewhat garish, use of it. Similarly, they should not be able to come and live in your house and kick you out of it, depriving you of the use of it because it's your home. So there are some limits on this. I said reasonable use. Obviously, if you were using your property to harm other people, we might put limits on that and things. If you decide to turn your home into a fire hazard, then we might intervene because at that point, your use of the property is putting other people at risk. But in general, it's your property. You should be able to do what you want with it, and other people should not be interfering in that, except on cases where they're protecting others or where you're jeopardizing other people's rights.
Yeah, so you can kind of control both the access to and the use of your own home within reasonable limits.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this becomes complicated when you look at the public-facing aspects of a private property. So, like, I'm allowed to paint the internal walls of my house whatever color I like, but I actually might get in trouble, at least in the regulatory environment in Ireland where I live, if I started painting graffiti or images on the side of my house that might create problems under kind of planning laws or local regulations around the use of private property. I don't know if that situation is true everywhere, but that might be an
Yeah,
issue
that
here.
I actually thought about that. I wasn't sure if you had the same sort of regulations. So we have certain places there will be homeowners associations, and they'll put rules around things like even what exterior paint colors you could use. So they might say only natural tones like browns and greens and things. And so if you paint the outside of your house neon pink, then you're going to run afoul of this sort of thing.
So, I mean, there's an idealistic sense of what a private property right is and what you're entitled to do with your home or anything that you own. But there are also, in the modern world, lots of limitations on property rights. But that's kind of a complication that may feature a little bit in the conversation that we have, but we don't need to dwell on it too much right now. I think that initial clarification is sufficient that it's some kind of control right over both the use and the access to a thing, a physical object, usually, but we'll come back to
Right.
other examples in a moment. Now, the second question I wanted to ask, and I don't know if this is really relevant to your inquiry, but I just wanted to mention it, which is like, why do we think it's important to protect property rights? And if that question doesn't really matter, if you just kind of take it that we do, why don't you look into the kind of justification for property rights in your paper?
Sure. It's not something I went into in this paper, you're right. I do think property rights matter. And I think partly this is simply due to the fact that it seems unjust in some way about depriving you of something that you've created or gathered or earned in some way. So if I just come along and take, you know, your house or car or whatever your object is, then it seems like that's not really fair. But I also think there's an element of interest in privacy and autonomy that comes in when you're looking specifically at physical space. So the idea that, yes, in some sense, what you do inside your house is an expression of your autonomy, and that you should have some privacy rights. I shouldn't be coming along and just interfering with that because it's an expression of your autonomy. It is, if I have the right to stop you from painting the walls of your house, then it seems like I'm pretty clearly interfering with that. So I think that there's both a justice aspect, but there's also some sense that allowing you to control who accesses your property and how it's able to be used gives you control over your life and who you want to be in it and how you want them to be in it.
Yeah, so I mean, there's basic considerations of fairness and justice, as you point out, but then also a derivation from a deeper concern that we have around autonomy and self-expression that you can link to property rights. And I mean, there's a much longer debate in history around how you justify property rights that we don't really need to get into. And people can look that up if they're interested. But, you know, there's like natural law theories or natural right theories and then consequentialist theories of property protection, which are not important for this discussion. Now, just before we get into augmented reality, and this is how you set it up in the paper as well, you point out that, you know, we're fairly comfortable with the idea of property rights to physical objects and places. That's should be uncontroversial. Yeah, the example that we had of my home, my house, or whatever, is a clear instance of a property right to a physical space, a physical object. But we are also now pretty comfortable with the idea of property rights to virtual things. Could you maybe explain or give some examples of how we've become comfortable with this notion of a property right to a virtual thing?
Sure. I can't necessarily give you the history behind it. You know, this is exactly how it happened. But I actually think the general idea behind it is pretty much the same. Because if I create a website, or if I earn an item in an online game through some sort of expenditure of effort, it seems like it should be mine in some sense, and that there would be something wrong with you coming and taking my virtual item or destroying my website or something like that. So there's the same sort of expenditure of effort, even though the result is not tangible. And I would note that we recognize that for intellectual property also. So even if what I've created is an idea, we recognize that I have expended the effort in order to create this idea, and therefore I have some rights over it. I think also that things like websites, personal websites at least, or blogs or things like that, they also seem like an extension of our own space in certain ways. I think that the kinds of structures we've created in social media, so things like friends list or being able to post things that only your friends list can see, is kind of an extension of physical space. It's sort of like having this virtual living room that you invite people into and you share your thoughts with. And if I don't have to put up with somebody just randomly walking into my house and doing whatever they want, it seems like I should have some control over that virtual space also.
Yeah, and there have also been court cases, haven't there, to do with like virtual space, right to virtual property in games, like online games, or am I misremembering that? So like, things like World of Warcraft, people have had court cases about items that they own in that virtual environment.
Right. There have been cases, I think possibly also Second Life, I can't remember for sure, but where basically there were theft of these virtual objects. But because the virtual objects represent effort and frequently, you know, a lot of time put into them, the courts have basically recognize that there is a kind of value in them, and that depriving somebody of it, even though it's not a physical object, it is a harm of a sort, and therefore isn't something that's legally or ethically permissible.
Yeah, I mean, the video game example seems kind of esoteric and fanciful, but actually, I mean, there are other much more mundane examples of digital theft, like theft of digital objects as a problem. And most countries, as far as I'm aware, have laws in place now that make the theft of a digital item basically equivalent to the theft of a physical item. So that could be like stealing somebody's digital files, or distorting or destroying somebody's digital files can be a kind of theft. So this then, I think, comes to an important point about augmented reality. So when we think about rights to virtual property, so the virtual property, as you point out, isn't a thing. It isn't a physical thing. So what kind of a thing is it? Is it, it's a virtual object. It's an informational object. Would that be the way to think about it? It's not tied to any physical location or space in a server or something like that, is it?
Right. I mean, yes, in some sense it has a physical instantiation because it's probably hosted somewhere on some server, but that's not really what we mean by it. So I think that this idea that it is more of an informational object is probably the right way of thinking about it, just as we do with intellectual property of various kinds.
Right. I mean, one way I was thinking of putting it, which is maybe overly philosophical, is that a virtual object is multiply realizable. Like it does have to be instantiated somehow in a physical object, in a computer somewhere or something like that, or in a set of servers, but it doesn't rely on any particular physical object for its existence.
Right, which leads to all sorts of odd things about it, like if you create digital art, is there really an original to digital art, and does that affect its value? We're still sort of figuring out how we think about these virtual items. In some sense, if you delete one copy of my file but I have it elsewhere, it seems very different than if you've deleted all copies of it, or if you've burned the only physical manuscript or something, because as you point out, most of the time we don't really care about any one copy of this. We just want to make sure the content or the information still continues to exist.
Right, and those problems for virtual property can be particularly pressing, particularly when it comes to, I guess, intellectual property rights protection.
Right.
But let's talk about augmented reality, because that point about virtual property not being tied to a physical location and being an informational object, you might think initially that that's going to be true of augmented reality, but we mentioned this earlier, it's not. And I think this gives rise to the key dilemma or question at the heart of your paper. And the way I had of putting it was that the problem when it comes to considering property rights for augmented reality is that augmented reality blends together physical and virtual spaces in an interesting way. Could you just maybe explain that problem with the way in which augmented reality blends together the physical and the virtual, and why this creates a dilemma when it comes to the protection of property rights?
Sure. So for augmented reality, you are experiencing virtual content. So it's like virtual items in that sense. But you only experience it if you're in a particular physical place. It's tied to geographic location. And most virtual content isn't like that. You know, you and I could be accessing the same web page even though you're in Ireland and I'm in the US, because it doesn't really care where you are geographically. But augmented reality does. If you're not in the right place, if you're not using the right tools, whether that's a pair of glasses or an app on your phone, you're not going to experience that virtual content. And that's also unlike physical objects, because if I'm in the right geographic location and the physical object is there, then I'm going to experience that physical object. I don't really have a whole lot of choice unless I somehow deprive my senses of, you know, accessing the space around me. So if I'm in a space and there is a horse in the space, I'm going to see the horse. But with augmented reality, if the horse were part of the augmented reality, I'd have to both be in the physical space and using the right technical tools in order to get that content. So it's not like physical objects, because you only experience it using certain kinds of technological programs or tools, but it's not like virtual space, because you have to be in a particular physical space, and that makes them very, very different from either of those.
And then, so what's the dilemma that this creates when it comes to property, right? Questions about the rights to property.
Well, the question then is, so how do we actually understand this? Because the physical object, you know, if I have a book and you take my book, or you glue all the pages of my book together, it's pretty straightforward that you've done some sort of harm to me, because it was my property right was about this one specific object. For the virtual space, or the virtual world, the virtual objects are a lot more like this kind of intellectual property understanding. And we can understand we need to protect them in certain ways, maybe, but they don't really function exactly like physical objects, because they don't have a particular location. They're non-localized in some sense. The virtual one is odd, because we have a physical space, but we have a virtual content, and it's not clear the ownership of those two things are going to be tied together. So you could augment my physical space, and that's kind of odd. This idea that we could have a separation so that they have to be in my physical space or near my physical space, but what they experience might not have anything to do with me or with what I do with my physical space. It could be something that somebody else has done with my physical space. And that's very different than how physical property works.
Right. I mean, and just at the outset, you said the problem with the virtual case, but just to be clear to people listening, you meant the problem with the augmented case is this kind of pulling apart of different sets of property rights, potentially, is that you might own the physical space and I might own the augmented projection on top of that physical space. So there might be two different rights holders involved in these particular cases or instances, and that creates a problem. And but before we kind of go into that problem itself and the possible answers to that dilemma, you also point out in your paper that there are different possible ways in which augmented reality could develop that affects this question about property rights. So I don't know if you approve of my terminology of it, but I define them as being the multisphere mode and the single sphere mode. So maybe you could explain that distinction and whether the terminology is correct.
Sure. So I thought your terminology was nice. I've been struggling with exactly how to phrase this in a vaguely elegant way. Essentially, the issue when you're looking at philosophical issues of emerging technologies is, of course, we don't necessarily know how that technology is going to develop. So for the case of augmented reality, we know you have to use some sort of technology to access this digital content that's on top of the physical space. But we don't yet know how that technology is going to develop. So I saw two cases. One is what you called the multi-sphere mode. And this is the idea that we'd have a bunch of different independent augmented reality apps or programs or glasses or whatever. So that's where we are at the moment. You won't see the Pokemon unless you're in the Pokemon Go app. You won't see how the makeup looks unless you're using the L'Oreal app. So in this case, we have lots of different ways to access augmentations, and you're only going to see the augmentation that's associated with that particular app or program. I could also envision it, though, being more seamless, or more, this feels like the more futuristic view, where you called this the single sphere mode, where essentially we're effectively all sharing one augmented reality space. So yes, there would be this digital world on top of the physical world, but in some sense, we'd all be accessing the same digital world. So it would function a lot like physical space does now. It would just sort of layer on top of that physical space in this virtual realm. So we don't have to worry about if they're signed into the right program, because in essence, there'd only be one program or one shared virtual space.
Right. I mean, so it's like we're all sharing the same augmented reality platform, and it's... And another important point about it is in the single sphere mode, at least in the context of your paper, is that there's kind of a non-optionality to it, if that makes sense, so that your experience of the physical environment, the augmented version of the physical environment, is the same as my experience, whether I want it to be the case or not. That was kind of a part of your argument, as far as I could see.
Right. Essentially, you might be able to opt out of the augmented reality altogether, but that would essentially be it. Unlike now, where I don't have to see Pokemon if I don't want to, because I don't have to open that app. The idea here would be, if we're in the single sphere, I'm going to see the Pokemon, if they're part of that augmented sphere, whether I'm interested in them or not, because we only have this one shared virtual space.
Yeah, so we're imagining here there's basically like some kind of monopoly on the digital platform. I mean, to use an analogy with social networks or something, that there's basically a Facebook for augmented reality, and we're all accessing Facebook's version of augmented reality. Right. There's not these multiple independent specific use cases of apps for augmented reality. And so then we have those two possible scenarios or two versions of the technology. And then we also have an important distinction between, which we haven't actually discussed yet, which is between private property and public property or public spaces. So, and we have to consider both of those in relation to both of the use cases of augmented reality, the multi-sphere and the single sphere. So that means that for the purposes of your paper, there are basically four scenarios that we have to look at when we're examining the kind of ethics of property rights over augmented reality. And so for the remainder of our conversation, I think we'll just go through each of these four scenarios. So the first scenario I wanted to talk about with you is the case where we have a single sphere augmented reality. So we're all sharing that same augmented reality, and we have private property. Now, you suggest that that scenario is probably pretty easy from an ethical perspective. So maybe you could explain why you think that. What's the argument for thinking that?
Sure. So we're all in the single sphere. We're all accessing augmentations in the same way. And as you pointed out, the view of this would essentially be that I don't have much choice about experiencing augmentations at all. So I think of this as equivalent to when you're walking down the street and you see signs in people's yards. So I don't really have a choice. If I'm just walking down the street in my neighborhood, I will see whatever people put in their yards, whether I want to or not. And in a single sphere, that's going to be the same sort of thing. Whatever you put out, everybody's going to see. And one of the things about the single sphere is that that could lead to certain kinds of exclusion. So if we only have this one platform, then if you augment my space, that could prevent me from augmenting it, or it could interfere with my augmentation. So in this case, it seems a lot like the physical case where if I don't want you to put a sign in my yard, I can remove it. If I want to put a sign in my yard, I can put it in. I have control over this because it's my space. And essentially, my use trumps the use of others who don't own the property. If I don't want people to put political signs in my yard, I have the right to exclude this. So I think that this case is very, very similar to that, where it's not a case that we could all do augmentations on different platforms and they could all coexist in some nice fashion. It's a case where all the augmentations are together. So if I don't have any control over who augments my space, it either may become totally unintelligible because we have horribly overlapping augmentations or something like that, or it might just be that your augmentation has sort of beat out mine. It's sort of like you put a big sign in front of my yard, and I guess I can still put up signs, but nobody's going to see them. And there seems some sense in which that's not really fair. So you might have certain rights to do augmentations, but it's not clear you have the right to do it in my space and preventing my own augmentations of my space.
So if I read this correctly, the single sphere case with private property, effectively, we don't change much from our current system. It's effectively the same thing. It's just the rules that apply to interferences with a physical space apply to interferences with the augmented space. Is that the gist of it?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and I tend to agree with that. But as you point out, that's probably not the most likely scenario. It's probably more likely that we have the multisphere case. So how do we approach the multisphere case in private property? So, you know, we can all access and use different augmented reality platforms, and some of them have a digital projection over my property that I don't like, but I don't have to see it. And if I want to go on to augmented reality, I can do something different on my space, on my version of augmented reality. I can put signs in your yard that you might like, and you can put signs in my yard that I don't like. What happens in that scenario?
So the idea behind the property rights was that you can't deny me or deprive me of my property, and you can't interfere with my reasonable use of it. In the multi-sphere case, it's going to be a lot harder for you to interfere with my use because there'd be so many different spheres of augmentation. It could still happen. So if there were an app that multiple people used and two users of that app wanted to augment the same space in different ways, you could still have a conflict. And I think probably in that case, the owner's use would still take precedence. But on the other hand, if you are creating augmentations on some sort of gardening app where you tag all of the flowers in different people's yards, and I'm doing augmentations on a history of historical houses app, and I tagged it with all kinds of historical information about its construction and its use and stuff like that, it's not really clear how they'd interfere with each other. Because if you want to see the gardening stuff, you go to the gardening app. If you want to see the historical information, you go to the historical app. If you're really not interested in it, so you're somehow horribly offended by plants, you could just not open the gardening app. So it's a lot easier to avoid the augmentation. It's a lot easier to have multiple augmentations that aren't really harming each other. They're not interfering, except in the case where we happen to overlap on exactly the same app.
Right. I mean, you kind of analogize this to doing a web search on information about somebody else's property, like maybe the historical information, or even to go with that gardening analogy, you can imagine I'm walking past your garden, I see a flower, and I look, I can use one of those apps that takes a picture of it and tells me what it is. That seems to be relatively innocuous. And so if the same thing happened that I'm walking around with Google Glass on and it just automatically projects information about what flowers are in your garden, that doesn't seem like a serious issue, and it doesn't seem like it interferes with my enjoyment of my property or your enjoyment of your property. So,
right.
I would tend to think that that's relatively innocuous. But then you also suggest that there are scenarios in the multisphere case that could be ethically problematic, probably not to do with interference with property rights per se, but for other ethical reasons. Maybe you could talk a bit about those.
Sure. I think a lot of it comes down to what the augmentation is being used for. So, for instance, there's going to be things that would be unethical to put in an augmentation. If I posted virtual slurs on somebody's house, that might be unethical. Or if I post confidential information or something like that. It's not really clear to me, though, that in those cases, the augmentation is the ethical question, because you shouldn't share the confidential information in more traditional methods either. So we could have versions of traditional concerns about sharing information and things like that. There's other kinds of cases that are a lot less clear, though. So let's suppose in a particular neighborhood, there is somebody who lives there and they're Jewish. And this is something that you could tell if you pay a lot of attention, because they have a mezuzah outside their front door, and during Hanukkah, there's a menorah in the window or something like that. So it's not really private information what their religion is. If I create an app that flags them as being Jewish, is this wrong? Well, it seems like it would pretty clearly be wrong if I did this for some sort of anti-Semitic purpose. So I create this app and it flags all of the Jewish people in a town so that we can go harass them. That seems pretty clearly unethical. But what if we're just listing the religions of the various people living on the street? Assuming I didn't gather that information through some sort of unethical means themselves, like spying on them, it's not clearly unethical, even though obviously it could be used for unethical purposes. And I think those are the sorts of augmentations that are a little bit trickier to figure out what to do with. Similarly, there's other kinds of cases where there's nothing really wrong with the augmentation per se, but the particular place we've put it seems a little bit questionable. So I'm thinking about something like if we have a daycare, so there's a lot of small children there, and I use an app and I augmented it with, you know, very violent or sexual imagery or something like that. It's not really clear there's anything wrong with creating an app that would do that. It sounds very unpleasant, but I'm not sure that you couldn't do that ethically. And it's not clear it would really have any effect on the daycare, because I'm assuming that would be a pretty niche use app. So probably it isn't interfering with their place of business. You know, people are not staying away from it in droves because of this. But on the other hand, it still seems something odd about having this really graphic, violent content on the outside of a daycare, because that's content we don't generally associate with small children. And that is specifically an augmented reality problem, because that's saying you might have virtual content that's completely fine in and of itself, but juxtaposed on this particular physical place, it seems problematic. And so that's a kind of case where I don't think we have really clear intuitions about what to do with, because it's a very new kind of case. So those are a couple of things that I talked about as kind of weird cases of trying to figure out what might be permissible to augment in this multi-sphere private property case.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this myself. You know, I was flying recently, and a lot of people watch movies on their laptops or their tablets or even on the airplanes as entertainment system. But it occurred to me, you know, what if somebody started watching pornography on a flight? And that might be deemed ethically dubious, particularly if other people could see it. They could access it. That would be a problem. But the difference in the daycare example you're imagining, I presume, is that it's not accessible to other people. So it's not like you're imposing the sexual imagery on somebody else.
Right, unless you're choosing to use that app, but then it seems like you're consenting to it.
Right, yeah. And I mean, just to be clear, we're assuming, for the sake of the argument, that the imagery in question by itself is not ethically problematic or is deemed to be permissible to view or accessible.
Yeah. Right, because otherwise it's not a hard case. If it's already unethical to create, it doesn't matter what you associate it with.
Yeah, but it seems like we may come across analogous examples anyway with, you know, people, I don't know, listening to stuff on their earphones in unusual locations. I could go into a church maybe and start listening to anti-Christian or anti-Catholic propaganda on my earbuds. Would that be problematic?
Probably not if nobody could hear it. I'm not sure that it's really problematic if it's totally private. But on the other hand, if the people around you could hear it, then maybe we start having more of an issue.
Right.
It's not a perfect analogy, because I don't think the people around you would be consensually overhearing it. Whereas the app case, I'm assuming nobody accidentally wanders into this app. So they'd have to be choosing to use it, which sort of sidesteps the consent sort of problem.
Okay, but this actually does bring me to another question that I wanted to ask, however. And one thing you might analogize augmented reality with is imagination. So, you know, I could just imagine, when I'm in a daycare center, I could imagine sexual imagery or something like that. Or I could imagine racial slurs written on the side of my neighbor's house or something like that. And maybe it's a problematic use of my imagination, but it seems like it doesn't raise any ethical or legal questions. Now, I think that analogy is bad for some reasons, but maybe we could explore like why it's a bad analogy. Because, like, what are the important differences between just purely imagining something happening in the physical world and an augmented reality version of it.
Sure. I thought that was an interesting case. The thing that stood out to me as making it a not totally accurate parallel is the public nature of augmentation. Nobody has access to my imaginings directly. So in some sense, I'm free to imagine whatever I want, and people will only know what I'm imagining if I share it with them in some form. Augmented reality isn't like that, because anybody who has the app would be able to access it. And even if this is some really obscure app and there's only a few users, it's still more public than the inside of your head. And so I think that that's where we start getting a difference, that in some sense, you have privacy rights over your imagination, but it's not clear you have those over this public-facing augmentation.
Right. I mean, I guess we could imagine a reality in which everybody has their own private augmented reality software that they can completely kit out and specify however they wish. But at least for your paper, you're imagining cases where there is some kind of sharing and distribution of the same digital projections over the physical space. And in that case, I agree, it's a bad analogy, and the ethical questions do become important because of that distributive or sharing aspect of it.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about a case where it was totally private. I guess because in some sense I didn't see the point, but I could see somebody doing that. I'm thinking of things like all of the programs that let you take a photograph and then alter it in different ways. And sometimes you share that, but you might do it just for your own amusement. You know, it entertains me to draw cat faces on pictures of my neighbors or something like that. And I suppose you could have an augmented reality version of that. And in that case, I don't know if it's ethically problematic, or at least no more ethically problematic than just having the imaginings at all. Maybe I would worry about you a little bit if you spend all of your time having these like horribly violent fantasies about other people. But I'm not sure that it would really be much worse if you had these horribly violent fantasies in this totally private app. Those cases actually seem pretty equivalent. I just hadn't thought about that kind of case.
Yeah, so I think I agree that in that scenario, the ethics of the private augmented reality platform, it's no more problematic than the ethics of imagination more generally, in a sense. So, I mean, there could be something wrong with having lots of violent fantasies, and we might think it's bad for you in various ways, but it's not worse for you to be having them via an augmented reality platform, or it doesn't seem initially anyway to be obviously
right.
Worse. Right. Let's move on then to the other two cases, which involve, again, multi-sphere and single-sphere AOR, but in this case involving public property. Now, initially, I suppose we have to just point out that there are important differences between public property and private property. So maybe you could just briefly sketch what those important differences are.
Sure. Public property is more complicated in some ways, because in private property, I said you can't deprive me of it, you can't interfere with my reasonable use of it, but the person who you can't deprive is, you know, one person or maybe a family or something, but it's a fairly small number of people. Public property, you still probably can't interfere with the reasonable use of, but now we're talking about the use of the public, and the public may have varying ideas about what they want to use space for. They may be competing with each other, because even a public place might have a capacity, so we couldn't fit in all the people who wanted to use it. It belongs, I mean, it's a public space. It doesn't belong to a single person, so I don't have the same sort of property rights over a public space as I do over a private space, except perhaps in some more abstract sense that I am a member of the public owns a space, so I have some small claim on it. But I don't have the kind of all-encompassing, prevailing ownership claim that I do for my home or my book or whatever my single piece of property is.
Yeah, I mean, one way I tend to think about it is there's an idealized conception of what a public space is, that it's something that's kind of managed and owned for the common good.
Right.
But in reality, I guess public spaces are highly contested are they're more contested than private spaces, and that the actual use and purpose of public spaces is something that's open to debate and dispute, particularly in democratic societies. I mean, maybe actually specifically in democratic societies.
Yes.
And so we have more conflicting interests at stake. And so when we think about the ethics of augmented reality in public spaces, we have to factor in the fact that they are contested and that there are multiple interests at stake. So if we discuss the scenario of multi-sphere augmented reality and public property, I mean, what do you think the ethics of that is? You use an analogy, which I think seems on the face of it appropriate, which is that it's really not that different from using multiple different guidebooks in a public space. Could you explain that analogy and the kind of conclusions or implications that you draw out from that?
My thought on this was that if you have these multiple spheres of augmented reality, then people would be accessing them on their phones or their glasses or whatever. And they might be using different apps for different purposes, but that's kind of the nature of public space. So this wouldn't be much different to me than if I were in a public square and I were looking at my guidebook to find out, you know, historical information about it, whereas you're on the other side of the public square and you're looking up information about where there's good restaurants nearby or something like that. Neither of us is really interfering with the other person's use. They're both seem reasonable things to do in the public space. And I think that the multi-sphere augmented reality is going to be very similar to that, because people have different purposes, they have different interests, there would be different apps that cater toward them, but I don't really see those as clashing with each other, because if I'm not interested in whatever information you're accessing, I can just not use that app. Now, you pointed out that public spaces are contested, and that is one thing that can happen. I don't know that this is unique to augmented reality. I think this might just be a way that that can appear. So what I'm thinking of is, when Pokemon Go was at its height, there were people who complained that there were so many people in something like a public park playing Pokemon Go that the children couldn't actually access the playground equipment that was there because there were just too many people doing this. And I could see something like that happening, but I think that points more to the idea that we have different uses for the space and the general contests we have in public spaces, as opposed to being something really unique about the augmented reality aspect.
Yeah, it seems like augmented reality could just give rise to problems that we're familiar with in terms of the use and the ethics of public spaces, that we've got to balance these different interests or different purposes behind the use of the public space, and the augmented reality device could undermine some groups' interests or uses of that public space, and we might say, well, it's gone too far. The interests of the people using the augmented reality are outweighing or dominating the interests of the other use case, and that's a reason to push a balance of power back, so to speak.
Yeah, one case that actually came up is the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. had problems with people playing Pokemon Go there, and essentially the museum didn't regard this as very appropriate, because of course the Holocaust is something that we generally approach with, you know, a solemn demeanor or trying to remember what's happened, and having people running around chasing these colorful little monsters just didn't really seem to fit in well with that. People have reported having similar kinds of issues with people in cemeteries. So if it's a funeral and somebody else is running around catching these monsters, then there's some sense of maybe this is interfering a little bit. So I support the ability of public places like that to try to opt out of certain augmented reality applications, because I think it is reasonable to say that even public spaces have intended uses, and that there's certain things you're not allowed to do in those public spaces. Like if you're in a park, a national park or something, you can't destroy the plants in it. You know, there's something unethical about that because you'd be interfering with other people's enjoyment of it. So I think that there might be some reasonable caveats on that if the augmentation is causing behavior that wouldn't have otherwise happened there, and it's enough to be grossly interfering with the intended purpose. But I think that there's probably not going to be a huge number of those cases.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, that public spaces aren't all created equally, and some have dominant purposes or uses and functions that we need to factor in when it comes to the ethics of how we use those public spaces. That then brings us to the last scenario in your paper, which is the single sphere augmented reality and public property, public spaces. Now, I think this might be kind of the most interesting case. And one of the things you argue is that we should kind of approach this in the same way that we approach the right to free speech, or our free speech in public spaces, I guess. Maybe you could explain that way of thinking about it, and again, the conclusions that you think we should draw from that analogy between kind of free speech uses and the use of augmented reality.
So I actually think I agree with you. This is in many ways the most interesting case. We're in the single sphere again, so we're back to the idea that you can't avoid the augmentations except by avoiding augmented reality altogether. Basically, everybody would see everything. So I see two ways that we could go, and I'm not even sure which way we're going to go. We could see augmentation like graffiti. So we could view augmentations as something like an unwanted adornment of public places. And in general, unless it was created by Banksy, we don't value graffiti. We get rid of graffiti. We regard that as something that is acceptable to do to get rid of in a public place. But on the other hand, we could see it like speech, and it's much less clear then that we'd want to limit it, because in general, you're allowed a great deal of freedom of speech in public places, even electronic speech. So the government generally should not be controlling people's conversations in public places, but they also shouldn't be controlling your texts. So if I text somebody who's in the same public space, it's not really much different than if I talk to them. And so the fact that this kind of speech is virtual doesn't really seem relevant. So if we go for the idea of it being speech, we want to preserve it. If we go for the idea of it being graffiti, we may want to get rid of it. And the problem is that, of course, there's probably some of each of this. You know, there's going to be people who could put up information or opinions about maybe there's a war memorial and maybe people don't think we should be memorializing this event. For instance, in the U.S., there's a lot of statues of Confederate soldiers, and there's a lot of controversy over the fact that you're memorializing people who fought to defend slavery. So maybe we could say, yeah, it seems like there could be free speech around this, and people would want to comment on this, and that would be worth preserving. On the other hand, judging from how people use the internet, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of augmentations, which are essentially the equivalent of, you know, posting cat pictures on top of it. So it's not exactly clear how we deal with that, particularly if we're in a single sphere and we could end up, the augmentations could interfere with each other. So we'd run this risk of, if there's valuable speech here, is it going to drown out other things, or is it going to be drowned out by other augmentations? The difference between the augmentation and the conversation case is that, of course, my conversation is very short-lived. So it is true that if there's too many of them going on at once, you might not be able to hear, but they all tend to be short in duration. So eventually people might leave the square and I might be able to hear better. If the augmentations just persist, then eventually we're going to get some sort of horribly overlapping massive augmentations that's probably unintelligible. So preserving every possible augmentation leads to certain problems. It seems like we should preserve, or at least it's plausible to say we might want to preserve some of them because they're like speech. There's plausible to say some of them we might see as not adding value or even as somehow devaluing the public place we want to get rid of. And so I don't think there's an easy answer to this case, which is, of course, probably why it's so interesting to think about.
Yeah, when I was thinking about it, I was thinking that maybe it's similar to pollution of public spaces as well. I mean, maybe that the idea of graffiti captures that to some extent, but I was wondering whether it was not visceral enough or something. You tend to think of graffiti as a purely a visual tag on a building, but with augmented reality, we could imagine a much kind of richer media pollution of a public space. I think that...
I like that, except that I'm not sure that we ever see pollution as good. And to have the problem, we need to see that there's this juxtaposition, that some of it might be like your pollution case, but some of it might actually be valuable, like the speech case. I think that you're right, the pollution is much more of a visceral thing, but it also removes, in some ways, our ethical intuition that it might actually be something worth having, because I don't think most people think pollution is actually worth having.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky thing, because sometimes the borderline between what's pollution and what's not pollution in some instances can be tricky, in that a certain amount of something can be good and beyond that it becomes polluting. Like, I don't know, certain kinds of smells could be pleasant in a public space, but if you get too much of them, they might be bad, like coffee beans being roasted or something. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. I think the point, though, is made that, you know, there could be good features or good aspects to the augmentation of public spaces that also need to be factored in, and the word pollution is maybe overly negative in that sense. The other question I wanted to ask, which maybe this is an obvious point, and it's something that we're confronting anyway when it comes to digital monopolies, which is that if we do have a single sphere augmented reality in a public space, that means that it effectively just has to be regulated and managed in the same way as a public space. So that, you know, if it's owned by a private company, this augmented reality platform, they have to protect and ensure that, you know, rights to free speech and the free use of public spaces are protected. Is that correct?
Well, that gets really interesting, because that's going to depend a lot on where you are. Free speech and the U.S. has to be protected by government. It can't be limited by government, but it could absolutely be limited by private company. So in some sense, if this were the Facebook of, you know, the augmented world, they could just decide to do whatever they want in many ways. They don't have to actually grant you speech rights. I don't know if that's true in other countries, but it does raise kind of worrying questions for the public space cases in particular, because we do tend to think of public spaces as allowing for certain free exchanges of ideas or discussions or something like that. And if this is ultimately all at the whim of a single company, that may introduce wrinkles that actually we see sometimes in social media and platforms like that, where they have limitations on what people can do.
Yeah, I mean, I had another podcast with a few episodes ago, I think it's episode 51, where we discussed that the free speech and Facebook scenario. So I don't need to get into it here, but I think maybe some of the points raised in that earlier conversation I had with Michele Loy are similar to the issues that might arise for augmented reality in public spaces. Maybe we could just wrap up then, because we've now discussed the four scenarios, with some reflection on maybe some of the other important ethical issues that arise from augmented reality. So I don't want to go into these in any depth, but what are the other questions you think we should be asking about augmented reality?
Sure. I've seen three other big issues that have occurred in discussions of ethics in augmented reality. So the first one are privacy concerns. If you have something like the Google Glass and you're walking down the street, there is the worry that if you combine, say, facial recognition technology with publicly available information about people, that you suddenly could have lots of information about strangers. So if I'm walking down the street and I see somebody and the technology can pull up, oh, I see their social media profile, so right now I know their name just by looking at them. Maybe I know other information, depending on how much is out there, information's out there that's accessible. And there's people who think that might have privacy concerns. Maybe we shouldn't be able to just wander down the street and instantly have that information about strangers. There are worries about informed consent, which to some extent that depends on the technology. So this came up mostly with the glasses. There's this idea that if they could record, because most of them could, record the imagery or record the conversations or something, and people might not have any idea that's what was happening. This is not unique to augmented reality technology, but any kind of technology that's indistinguishable from things that don't have that ability raise issues of people worrying that they could be recorded without their consent. The other cases, one that I saw was deception. So all of the cases that I had were ones where the augmentation was pretty easily separable from reality. So you could tell, yes, I'm accessing augmented reality right now, or no, I don't really think that the sides of this daycare have been painted with these graphic scenes. I'm pretty aware that that's an augmentation. But there would be sort of an interesting case if somebody were, say, really malicious, and let's suppose everybody's plugged into the single sphere of augmentation and we do it all the time. Well, it seems like I could be malicious and I could augment a giant hole in the road to make it look like the road was fine. And if this technology were pervasive, everybody uses it, I could cause real harm through that kind of deception. So I think that's a particularly interesting case for the HoloLens or the sort of wearable AR, where you're not just consciously looking down at your phone or looking up at the regular space. So those are kind of the three issues that I saw in addition to property as cropping up with augmented reality.
Yeah, I mean, that last one just, I guess, highlights once again the problems when we create technologies like this, particularly shared platform technologies or network technologies, of cybercrime or malicious uses of the platform as being something that we really have to guard against.
I mean, right.
Yeah. I mean, one ethical question that I think is interesting, and I believe this was pointed out to me by a previous guest in this podcast, Adam Carter. If you go back to that example we had earlier of the surgeon with the sort of paint-by-numbers augmented reality for surgery, If that kind of technology becomes widespread, it could be that it increases the number of duties that ordinary people have because they lack professional expertise. So at the moment, I can say that I don't have to perform CPR on somebody or whatever because I don't know how to. But if I can just immediately access a paint-by-numbers augmented reality tutorial on how to do it, and it's pretty effective, then suddenly the number of duties that we have to intervene or do something using expert knowledge might increase. So in a sense, we might all acquire similar duties to an expert. So I think that's an interesting ethical scenario as well here.
Yeah, that is interesting. The idea that the more accessible that information is, more or less instantaneously, it's going to be harder to say, well, I didn't help because I didn't know how, or I just didn't have the right information. That's not going to be very plausible anymore as an excuse.
Right, exactly. So I think that's an important thing to consider as well. I think that's about it, though. I think we'll leave it at there. Thanks for joining me for this conversation. I think this has been a really interesting and a deep dive into the ethics of property and augmented reality.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed this.